podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to a bonus edition of the Gael on Ice Rugby podcast on what has been a week of weeks, and it's only Tuesday. Yesterday, Leinster confirmed the signing of All Black Geordie Barrett on a short-term deal from December 2024 through to the end of the 24-25 season, and it's fair to say it's not gone down swimmingly, myself amongst them. I'm not flying solo tonight, despite this being a bonus podcast, because I'm happily joined once again this week by Leinster fan Keane O'Miller. Keane, welcome back. It feels like a long time since we've spoken, even though it's only been, 48 hours.
48 hours is a long time in the constant news cycle we live in now. What a 48 hours it's been.
He has. The big news is obviously, the likes of Ross Maloney going to Bath, or, some contract extensions, or some players who did or didn't get cited. But we like to focus on the niche things, the things that no one's talking about here, and that's what it's about. But to be fair, Keaton, the fact that you're on means I have to start with your own personal excitement, because it's the only way to do it. And listen, Geordie Barrett is a fine player. We were just saying before we started recording, he's probably top 10 in the world in centres. There must be a huge excitement for you on a personal level, and for Leinster fans in general, once the shithousing is parked to one side.
Yeah, no, that's it. Once you put the shit, if you look at it on a purely kind of rugby player basis, what a signing. I mean, really, seemingly out of nowhere. I mean, I'd heard rumours over the past 2 weeks or so, but honestly didn't take them seriously. You hear stuff like this and you're like, come on. So 6 month sabbatical from New Zealand to Leinster. It's significant. It really is significant. You can't underline how significant a player like that is going to be to a Leinster back line. He is predominantly a centre, but he covers literally, he has covered everything literally from 10 to 15. And to the level he does so for New Zealand at an international level is absolutely insane. Brings a flexibility that's really you won't find it in many players. I'll put it that way. It's an historically significant signing for Leinster. It really is. It kind of feels like, other notable historic ones, it's your Brad Thorns, your Rocky Elsons on the short-term contract. It feels an awful lot like that. And really excited to see not only what he can bring himself as a player, but what he can do with bringing on some of the backs.
Yeah, no, we'll get into that a little bit later, because it is important to balance the fact that he's a fine player being brought in to win silverware. He will also leave a bit of a cultural impact. And I suppose the one gag that I'm only after realizing now is, whatever happened to that Crusaders, Lincoln that you had? After signing their arch rival's best player, is that a part of it? Is that helping the Crusaders getting back on top by taking Geordie Barrett away from Super Rugby for a year? I don't know. I feel like Rob Petty's doing enough to hold Crusaders back. Anyways, but I want to touch on the optics. And optics is usually a dirty word, but I think in this case it is true, because earlier on in the season, when Leinster signed Orgeir Snaiman, Caelan Doris was announced stepping up to a central contract only days beforehand. And then, of course, Gerry Thorne is the one with the scoop, and it breaks at 11 o'clock at night. It's all anyone's talking about. This time around, Dan Sheehan gets the central contract, which, to be fair, I think most of us had heard this months, if not weeks ago, that he was likely going to be stepping up, and deservedly. But then Geordie Barrett signs. And there is the question mark then from other provinces, that is, you already have all the central contracts. What more can we do? Because now you're taking a player like Dan Sheehan off the books to sign Geordie Barrett. And the other side of that is, the more central contracts you have, the more you can boost other players' wages and keep them. And the likes of the Ronan Kellers, the Jack Conans, the Jamie Osborns, the Kieran Frawleys, guys who might be looked at as well. Yes, it's good business if Leinster are one of maybe two teams in Ireland. But when there's four, that's when it starts to get a little shaky.
Yeah. I mean, just in terms of the optics of it, announcing them within hours of each other, it does kind of irretrievably link the two in people's minds. It really is. I mean, it's only natural to. It's very hard not to. I kind of they probably were looking to just really control the narrative and get a big impact from it, because it's a big impact signing. But you could only kind of boost it by having some fairly substantial news in regards to one of the homegrown players in advance of it. In terms of the NIQ slots, he's a one for one with Natai, really. But in terms of the monetaries, I'm not sure you can directly correlate Sheehan's central contract with the funding for Jordy Barrett, because we don't know actually where the funding is coming from. Often with the marquee signings like this, the big ones, there is private money involved, and as you know, we will hear little to nothing about that. We might hear a whisper that it was, this rich person or that rich group of people who have contributed something to it or not. So it's a bit
Plus, the
murky,
flip side of
but
that then, Keane, is most Irish internationals that aren't on a central contract are probably being topped up on a player international interest contract, which maybe Sheehan wouldn't have because it's 2 years since he signed a contract and 2 years ago his position was murky, to use your own word. But at the same time, it's an element of, well, he's one of the best players in the world. If Leinster were going to pay him, it was probably going to come from outside anyways. He was definitely going to get himself get paid, as they say in America, a lot of the time. So there's probably that. I suppose that's, trying to balance it is what we're going to try and do here tonight, because yes, there is probably private investment, but the reality is that Dan Sheehan, they're not paying a cent for him anymore, which is the beauty of the Irish system. And good on Dan Sheehan, genuinely one of the best players in the world, and it has freed up an opportunity to sign someone like Jordy Barrett. And listen, I like Charlie Nata. I think he's a good player, but it's a step up, I think it's fair to say.
I mean, it's hard to spin it any other way than a big step up, and I think Charlie told me to say that himself. I mean, he's no fool. It's
Yeah, no.
yeah, no, it does feel very similar to the kind of the Brad Thorn signing in 2012. That is just such a large step up in a player quality that it could really have like we said before, a massive impact at Leinster. The NIQ stuff, it's so hard to figure out exactly what's going on behind the scenes. Same as the central contracts, actually. I mean, the central contracts are very public because they're announced. I've also heard some people say it's like, no, yeah, the provinces pay have to pay some of the wages for the central contract. I've heard other people say they don't pay any of it. I think it's not that they pay any of it, but it's not crystal clear to people exactly what they represent, and people seem to have attached an importance to the central contract itself, whereas actually it's just kind of like a monetary, it's a financial instrument. And I
And
think that's one.
there's an element to that. Sorry, Keane, just to
Yeah.
interrupt, but there's an element to that that goes into like image rights and these
Yep.
small, minutiae contractual obligations that ties into it. Like if you go back to say Ireland's World Cup jersey launch and their Six Nations jersey launch, only one player in either of those wasn't centrally contracted. First it was Ross Byrne, second it was Kieran Foley. So that's kind of how they do it, and that's probably how they tie into it, and that's where. If you were to overhaul the system, because there's loads of people going to be saying, does this system work? And it's a fair question, but the RFU probably have themselves in knots in some regards in that way, because when you tie in so many different things, like something like image rights, it can be so hard to work it back out then. And then it goes into the provinces, and the provinces, they're not a provincial player when they're with Ireland, they're an Ireland player essentially, and it goes into that. And I know everyone wants to be in those Vodafone ads. Like, I think this looked like a load of crack, but I don't think they do either. Maybe Dan Sheehan. I think Dan Sheehan would sell. I think that's fair to say.
He's a handsome man.
He is, but Shaquin, aren't they all handsome men?
They are
There's
an
no
handsome
one to
man.
say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, look, I mean, I would actually be the first to agree to you. I don't think the central contract system works. That may come as a shock to some people to hear from a Leinster supporter. I actually think it's kind of fundamentally broken, unfortunately. Like it still does the main thing it was set up to do, which is to keep Irish players in Ireland, but the landscape was vastly different. back when these were when these were dreamed up. They were never designed with distribution, financial distribution, an equal financial or a somewhat just financial distribution between the provinces. And that's where the issue lies now, is that because you have a concentration of players on the for the Irish team in one province, that it has created a disparity between that province and the other provinces to a very notable degree. I mean, kind of Connacht aside to some extent, given that they are the least funded of the four provinces. But Ulster and Munster are absolutely losing out, and it's not fair.
That's the thing. And like, I made this point months ago at this stage that if we get to a situation where, if we get to a situation where, say, Joe McCarthy or Matt Hanson or Jack Crowley step up onto a central contract, we assume they're next. I think that's fair. It's fair to assume they're next. Then it's most likely Ian Henderson that steps off. If not, maybe Tadhg Byrne. Then Munster either stay on one or, for instance, if it's Byrne for Crowley, or it's a case where Henderson comes off one and McCarthy goes up, Leinster go to 10, Ulster go to 0. And I'm sorry, but like, give me a player for free, then, oh yeah, we'll let you sign Werner Kock, he's a good player, and I'm sure the fans will love him. But at the same time, it just doesn't seem right. And that actually ties in brilliantly with the next point I want to get into, because there are a few post-COVID, I think this is the bit I fundamentally disagree with a lot of people's arguments on, is Munster signed these two players ages ago, Dale Ende's name, and fair enough. Post-COVID, there's been a lot more blocking of NIQ moves. Some of that is under-20s talent, undeniable. Academies have improved, I think that's fair. Less games to be played, so less smaller squads, and just the funding. Whereas Leinster have undeniably upgraded, and you can question the leap that going from Maloney to Sneijman would make, or different things, or from, as we said, maybe not Nahtai to Barrett. But this is where there's going to be kind of a bit of ire about it, because this is a move for Leinster to win a Heineken Cup, while other teams, and like, this is where the optics kicks in again, they're trying to not be in the Challenge Cup knockouts. And that's where it gets really hairy. Like, even as a Munster fan, did not deserve to be in the round of 16 based in the pool. Like, Challenge Cup, fair enough. And like, that's where you're like, oh, this is a bit, I don't have the words, but like, everyone, and there'd be a lot of expletives for a lot of people, I think it's fair to say.
Look, I can absolutely get that it's a very frustrating experience right now for a lot of people. Because I can see myself. It's not an equitable system. That you have some parts that are visible and public, and in the case of yesterday, extremely public, where the central contracts are conflated with really, really high quality signings. Now, I mean, I could temper that slightly by saying these are the first kind of high profile signings really that Leinster have had since 2012. But again, doesn't really matter a huge amount in terms of optics and timing. And given everything else that's happening, we're coming back to basket case for Ulster again, really. I mean, it looks like maybe they've turned a corner in terms of management, but
Time will tell. It's too soon,
It's too soon to tell. But there's some bad decision making there as well. Like changing the pitch, it was the wrong time to do that.
And
Honestly, I
that's
think.
where my question would have been when we talked about, say, Dan McFarlane being let go on the bonus spot here on this channel. We would have said, "What? Where's the IRFU stepping in?" Because ultimately, and this sounds really demeaning, and I do not mean to put down on any employees at, the different provinces, but a CEO at a province is essentially an operating officer. They're a subsidiary by all, realistically, and it's the new Sephora's and Co. that are, I don't like to say above them, but you are answering to them a lot of the time. And that's where, like, Ulster's pitch, if you knew they were going to be in the red, maybe don't sign off on that. Maybe don't sign off on signing Stephen Kitsoff, for example, and so on. And that's where it just gets. That's
Murky
where
again.
the murky again, but that's where the kind of disillusionment in some regards probably kicks in as well, where it's like, well, These are just bad call after bad call, or so it seems to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is it. And, successions of bad calls often go hand in hand with financial difficulties. And it's really unfortunate that Ulster are in that position at the moment. I'm not sure that you can, in actuality, look at the two signings that Leinster have made for next season and go, well, that money should have gone to XYZ, because we don't know if that money was actually in the IRFU coffers to begin with. But we can look at the money that is in the IRFU coffers and go, well, maybe we need to do something a little bit different. Like, maybe we need to make the ponies a little bit more public, maybe a little bit better funded. Maybe, they should be weighted towards the clubs that have, or sorry, the provinces that have fewer central contracts. Try to even up the system a little bit and at least give some kind of something for the players that are, even going to training squads with the Irish team, even if they're not necessarily first team, or even if they're holding tackle bags, like that 10K bump for that. Do you know what I mean? It's just some kind of public, clear, transparent system that shows, okay,
Transparency is
well,
going to be the buzzword, isn't it? Like, it really
that's.
feels that way, because even if you're looking at like France, and France do things their own ways that cannot be directly implemented because of their structure, I understand that. But they have gone for a more transparent system, and right down to French selections, where you're not taking all of our players for 6 weeks to hold tackle bags. That's not going to happen. And that's arguably fair enough, but like, transparency is going to have to kick in somewhere in that regard. And even if it's, I think the Player National Interest Programme is a good example. I think putting, if you cut central contracts by two, for example, because it is a bit bloated in certain positions, like back row centre, for instance, if you cut that down a bit, and then there's a little bit more money to go into the Player of National Interest Programme system, and then that becomes known, as opposed to, oh, well, if you see province plus IRFU, it's Player of National Interest. Wink, wink. But sure, the vast majority of people don't know that. And as well as that, like, did the players really care in that regard? They'd rather get the name recognition if it was the other way, I suppose.
Call them all central contracts. What does that mean? Literally nothing. It just means a contract. That's central. Like, I mean, honestly, you don't have to associate all of the naming rights and, advertising deals and sponsorships and everything with all of them. You could have a tiered system within it, but call them all central contracts. Announce them.
Yeah,
Have
absolutely.
young fellas going on to junior central contracts. Why not?
Could do that. You could look at I know there's player fees and all that for playing international games, but there's people who are in the business longer than we are, or have connections with the English system or Welsh or French or South African system as well, and finding something that ultimately have an agreement between the provinces and the IRFU, not an IRFU principle, is probably what some people would like to see as well. But we want to keep it pretty short and sweet, so I want to move on to something just on the financial side of things. Now, Jamie Heaslip's not someone that gets quoted in a lot of podcasts, as much as we loved him as a player, but he did say at one stage Leinster's status in the URC is essentially like financial doping. And whether you agree with that or not, you take nine centrally contracted players, estimate 4 to 5 million euro worth of salaries, because again, those guys deserve to get paid. If the money is in Ireland, they deserve it. I'm not saying that. Jordy Barrett is probably on about half a mil, even whether that's a per annum figure or a 6 month figure, I don't know, but give or take half a mil. And Argus Naiman is going to be on around the same amount. There's going to be bonuses. It's going to be guys who are playing international rugby who are on good contracts, or the likes of Keane Healy is on Leinster's books, big contract. You compare that to the Welsh regions, and this is where the juxtaposition is stark, because their entire budget is £4.5 million, and it's starting to, it will call the integrity of the league into question very, very soon, which I think no one wants. The IRFU are chief stakeholder. They don't want that either, I don't think. And like, it's not, you don't want to have this kind of Bayern Munich PSG style team in the league. Even if Leinster don't win it every year, you don't want to see that kind of that massive wage gap, I suppose.
No, you don't want a monolithic team within any league. It's bad for the league. I mean, Frankly, we kind of saw that already in the Pro 12, Pro 14 era. Leinster were fairly dominant, and it wasn't good for the league. It's a bit more equitable now, with the South African teams in, certainly. But yeah, the money thing is an issue, I'm not going to lie. Leinster have advantages, certainly. Enter the D word there.
I wonder what that actually, don't think, but I should clarify, the D word is not what people might be thinking. It
I
is
hope to God they're thinking demographics. It's not that kind
demographic.
of show.
It's not past the watershed yet.
No. So yes, there is some of the demographics, but a lot of it does kind of come then, does derive from the central contract situation that we're currently in. We've kind of covered that to some extent. So sorry, skipping through my notes. In terms of the URC, it is a league of union franchises, so it is the interests of the union that are represented within the league. Each union, sorry, that are the shareholders. Now, currently, a union, it is in their interests to have as many of their players within their own country as possible. Absolutely, it's a fairly
And in
straightforward
every
idea.
sport as well,
Yeah.
it's across, it transcends, doesn't it?
So, whereas with, say, the Premiership, it's the cap is there really to stop a horse race between the clubs. It's not the same thing, because the stakeholder, the union, is an incredibly different thing than a rich club owner, or an investment bank that owns a club, whatever you're having yourself. You know what I mean? It's there to represent the sport within the country and is answerable to the government as well. So financial dumping, I disagree with that term, frankly. Disagree with
It's
plainly, is it?
definitely overpowered of a
Oh
term
yeah,
because it's
no, it is.
not, it is still within the rules, it's still within their rights. I understand that.
That's
It's
the bit
more
that
of the
irks
kind
me.
of relative, the relative budgets is just, it's not easy on the eye.
Yeah, no, it's not. It absolutely isn't. And yeah, I can foresee some kind of regularization mechanism will be needed, but you're talking about across different countries, across different political unions of countries, and across different hemispheres, all with different currencies. That's going to be extremely difficult. And also all different economies as well. Whereas the countries that have this in place already, it's a single country. Or actually, they're all single countries, really. France is a little bit different again than everyone else in the entire world because they're French. But other than that, it's a tough one. It is going to have to be broached. But at the same time, like, for example, Wales is a great example. Yes, we're so much bigger than any of the Welsh teams, but the WRU have been chronically underfunding the regions forever. It's not, and yes, I know the regions aren't technically, well, Dragons is owned by the WRU, the rest of them are owned by independent bodies. So it's not quite the same thing. But the WRU have been putting that money into the semi-pro game instead. And they're kind of reaping the benefits. So it's not Big Bad Ireland's fault for that, on the whole, that they are doing that. They have much bigger kind of monolithic presence within the league than everyone else. But it's not, the fault lies somewhere between. As with most things, it's somewhere in between. And yes, we are going to have to look at it. We are going to have to figure it out. There could well be a minimum, as well as a maximum. Some kind of banding. I don't know. Honestly, I've thought about this one, and I can't come up with any kind of a fix for this one.
It's hard, and like there's as you say, currencies, there's different unions, there's so many different things at stake, and it's hard. And like someone did say, maybe an FFP type thing is the way forward. The only thing with FFP is it's based on revenue, and what would happen there is union backed clubs or whatever would just find a way around it. No more than like there are a few can very easily say that TV contracts are for the provinces. Very like you could, even though it's not really the case, people tune in to watch rugby, they could just spin it that way, and that's where it becomes again the
Murky.
water gets murky again, to
That's
use that
the
word.
watchword. That is the watchword.
It's
All of
that
this
and
stuff comes in.
transparency, they're the two words,
Yeah, well, they're the opposite sides of the coin. You got when you got the obfuscation of, well, reality. Really, it's probably what it boils down to a lot of time. But also kind of relative reality, what can be seen to be truth, or true in a from a particular point of view at a particular point in time, and then just trying to let people know what's actually happening and try to make something that's, fair again is a difficult word, but equitable for all the parties involved.
I agree. I do agree. Tina, I'm going to leave you one last point because this is something that's come up. I've done a podcast on Ulster. We've done a podcast post Six Nations. We've talked about the women's game. This is all just in 2 months. It's been busy, man. It's been
Yeah.
very busy. David Nusfora is finishing up at the end of the season. And for many people, he is kind of the stick to beat the Ira Fiúans. He's the one who's front and center. He has Shane Rossed himself into those photos, and that kind of, that ties into your reputation. What's your thoughts on David Nusfora? And like, I don't expect you to come out here and say he's awful, but I assume you'd be along the same lines myself, where he's probably run his course, and what happened with the women's game should probably have led to a change anyways, and so forth. So what way would you see it as we approach the David Humphreys era, which I've been informed, don't know how true it is, that David Humphreys is essentially already started working alongside David Nusfor at the very least. The two Davids is going to get very complicated for the next few weeks, but what's your thoughts on Nusfor before we go?
Yeah, probably the most divisive figure in Irish rugby since Warren Gatland. Is probably the best way to sum him up for me. He has not made any friends, really, I think is the other way to say it. He seems to operate on the basis that if you can't make everyone happy in a negotiation, make everyone unhappy instead, and that's fair too. Sounds like first world problems. He has caused plenty of heartache to Leinster fans from our point of view over the years. I'm not going to go listing them out, but things like the losing Ainger and Salah-Noh within 4 days of each other, that seemed mental to us at the time and really screwed with our progression for our younger players. Like our chart was gone. It's two from one position is gutting on a permanent basis like that. I'd blame Matt O'Connor on him as well if I could. But yeah, it's probably not his
You
fault.
can. You
Oh,
absolutely can at
great.
this stage.
Okay, yeah. That Matt O'Connor, that's his fault too. And yeah, he kicked my dog once.
He stole a couple of your chips apparently or
Yeah,
something.
he did. And then he told me that he'd had his fun, and that was all that mattered. No,
Know.
by all accounts, a kind of a fairly odd man, very withdrawn. Didn't look to integrate himself into even kind of the social circles within the IRFU, from what I understand. Definitely did not come here to make any friends, and I think on that to that extent, mission successful. But for all that said, some of the stuff worked.
Yeah.
Like Irish rugby is in a better position now than it ever was. You can't say none of that was down to him. At least some of it was. The Sevens as a pet project is actually kind of bearing some fruit now to some extent. Like we've got two teams going to the Olympics. It's not the worst return. Women's rugby is where he really, really, really dropped the women's 15s. To have catapulted that to keep the Sevens funded really is going to be probably my lasting memory of David Nusifora.
I think that's fair. I think that's something that, whether you're a Leinster fan, Munster fan, Connacht fan, Ulster, AIL, club rugby, whatever it is, or women's rugby, that's probably the one that you should look at because ultimately, winning Six Nations with arguably our best ever team, it feels good. But like, if the women's won Six Nations next year, it would feel twice as good. Because ultimately, like England are one of the best teams to ever play, the current Red Roses team. And that's kind of where it ties in. And you do mention the Olympics, that's great, but there is a kind of sense of lack of transparency around sevens, which I anything I've ever asked or looked into, if lack of transparency kicks in. Will the provinces be very happy with him? Probably not. Will Jacques Nienaber be pretty happy with him? Yes, because Jacques Nienaber, in his 3 years in Ireland, has signed some incredible players. But you'll never please everyone. And that's also the side of it. That is the part of the gig. There's four teams. It's not one, it's not two, but like four teams is still not the easiest balance in act either, when they bring in their own different levels of revenue and outside backing and so forth. But maybe we look on and say that he laid a good groundwork and David Humphreys kicks on. Maybe David Humphreys never reaches the same level. Who knows? Only time will tell. But Keane, thank you very much for joining us this evening, for joining myself. To everyone at home, if you did listen, if you made it this far, thank you. It's been enjoyable, and it's always good to get these bonus pods. The elephant in the room, I don't know if Keane knows this, but I'm going to drop this on him, is that apparently within about 20 minutes of us finishing our recording, that Tyler Blaindell is expected to be said to be Leinster's new attack coach, which, as a Munster fan, anyone I've spoken to, he's held in the same regard as Felix Jones. So that's kind of scary. That's one of the reasons why, when it was announced that my cat was leaving, he's someone I would have looked at, someone who knows the Irish system. So looks to be a great signing. I definitely have no qualms about that. Scared, but no issues with it.
Yeah.
But again, Keane, thank you very much for joining me. To everyone at home, thanks for tuning in. You can catch me on the Red Army podcast, and we'll be back with Champions Cup semi-final coverage in a couple of weeks' time. Leinster against Northampton in Croke Park, who can forget it? But until next time, thank you so much, and until next time, take it easy. Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.